The reading Carol and I had on September 18th, you discussed Carolyn's experience with mescaline, and you gave a description of how it seems to work on our sensorium. I was interested if you could explain what LSD does to our bodies and the experience that happens to people under, you know, very good quality LSD.
LSD itself does affect the sensorium. However, it cross certain mental barriers, especially those barriers associated with the other than the sensorium, in that it affect the portions of the brain associated with seeing, associated with the touch, etc. Now, these are the perceptive organs, perceptive portions of the brain. It affects those. The sensorium itself is little touched. But the amount of information that is then feeding back from these organs that sense, of course, realize they must have a pattern within themselves in order to sense. And the patterns begin to go back into the sensorium. It's different than mescaline, because mescaline work on the sensorium itself. The sensorium have a tendency to draw upon the organs of sensation, while LSD have a tendency to push from the senses into the sensorium.
But that means sort of like the nerve of sensing of the sensory organs that are affected rather than the sensorium.
Yes.
And where is the sensorium in the skull, you know, inside?
The reticular formation.
Where is that? Do you know that?
Right in the absolute center, the most protected portion of the brain itself.
Now, what about the hypothalamus and the thalamus? Where is that?
That is part of that.
That's the most intimate part of the human brain.
Exactly.
In particular.
Yes.
And is that connected to the animal part? What's the part we have at the base of the brain?
Well, there are three brains.
Yeah, let's just review that.
There is that which is termed a primal brain, and that is a very low senses of itself. Then the next up is what would be described as the brachination brain, associated with simian learning. And then there is the forebrain, the cortex, full cortex of the brain, the upper brain. Now, connecting all of this is the reticular formation itself.
That includes the hypothalamus.
Yes, all within that grouping. Now, the point is, take mescaline, and the sensorium itself changes subtly so that it can draw upon the sense perception organs of the brain. It draws upon them. The taking of LSD, because it does affect at the level of the nerves, causes firing of these senses, which are then perceived by the sensorium. So, it could be seen that one is creative and one is imposed.
Which one's creative?
Mescaline.
One's imposed on the sensorium?
Well, and that's LSD.
Yeah, you impose on the sensorium, is what you meant there. Now, does the sensorium, this deepest part of the brain, the most, what do we call it, the most precious part?
Term it that,
yeah.
Yes.
Did apes have that part? Or is that a human part?
No, all primates have that.
All right. Does it connect to psychic experiences in other dimensions? Is that a core part that relates to that?
Well, it itself can, yes.
All right, now, Tim Leary, in discussing and writing about LSD, he put much spiritual emphasis on it, and he made a book paralleling the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which is, you know, a religious manifesto and tradition from Tibet in that area that describes the process that the soul goes through when they die, when one dies. Leary made a parallel with the experiences on LSD and claimed you go through these death experiences on LSD, though you don't die. Is his parallel accurate, or is he exaggerating the, shall we call, the spiritual part of LSD? Is he exaggerating the spiritual meaning of LSD?
He's exaggerating it because, realize that if you would describe LSD as an inward experience, that would be a good description. Because realizing all of the data that is stored in a particular portion of the brain, let's just choose one, the eyes. The eyes connect to a certain portion of the brain that is responsible for seeing. Now, in that portion of the brain that is responsible for seeing, there is a pattern recognition program. LSD trigger that and force the sensorium of the brain to perceive that which it is firing to the sensorium.
Right.
But only pattern recognition. But it is so, I term it, not coherent.
So what?
It's not so coherent. It's incoherent.
Yeah.
And because it is incoherent, the sensorium tries to make sense of it. Tries to make a rational of it.
And this is perceived by the user as a very tense drama, right? The making sense of it.
Yes. Look at a person on LSD. Shine a bright light at them. The eyes perceive it. The portion of the brain that is responsible for seeing perceives it. But what message does it send to the sensorium? Of random. Incoherent. The sensorium tries to make sense of it. And says that it is being inundated by white rays, that it is whatever, 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 depending upon the state of mind of the individual taking it.
Yeah.
LSD is also location dependent. LSD given in a clinical situation will produce one result. Taken in a group meeting where there is guitars and singing, in a different environment. But of all of these, mescaline is different. Mescaline will be relatively consistent no matter what situation is taken.
Okay, what is the drama that goes on, the internal voice that's talking and either getting exhilarated by the, you can help me on this if you want, getting exhilarated by the sensory confusion or getting panicky? Is that a physiological part of ego? It's not a soul thing that Leary makes out, because he says, you know, you're killing your ego and it's a spiritual thing. That's exaggerating just the effect of sensory confusion?
Exactly.
And you're, I think you're implying mescaline is the most spiritual, if you want to put that kind of implication on a matter.
But yes. Now, the other side of this is that LSD confuses the sensory organs so that the pattern is disturbed. Realize how long it took you to learn to see. It took you time to learn to see. You had to form the pattern and to learn to see. Now, that pattern established in yourself is then set awry by LSD, forming a new pattern. So therefore, when a person have, quote, flashbacks, unquote, they're just accessing that pattern that has been disturbed and is now a new pattern.
So the LSD does not affect the sensorium, the thalamus, and the hypothalamus, as someone once told me it does. It affects it indirectly.
Indirectly it's affected,
yes. And certainly not on a spiritual or positive way.
No.
So, all right. Now, just to go along another direction, is the Tibetan Book of the Dead an accurate description of the process of physical death and what happens when you go into the other dimensions?
It's accurate to its own belief system.
Yeah.
Realizing that every society has its approach to death. If you would take the Egyptian Book of the Dead, with the emphasis on Osiris and Styx, you see, one must cross that river. Culturally, that entire society was river-oriented. They lived by the river. They died by the river. It killed them, and it fed them. It was central to their existence and central to their continuance. If you look into the Tibetan Book of the Dead, it will then cause another view of the society. Each society dies to its own belief conventions.
That would mean, Evergreen, that what people experience after death then would be somewhat or completely a result of their belief system.
Exactly.
That they had before they died.
Yes.
And so none of it's really true.
Oh, it's very true. To the person who was doing this, exactly. That is comfort. Death is fear. So you must overlay death with a belief system of what happened at death.
Is that why people go to sleep after they die for a while sometimes?
Oftentimes.
And they have to go through that dream?
Because they have such a belief system that if they did not, then total confusion, total loss of self.
Well, does one meet their relatives and loved ones, so to speak, when you die, or is that all in this imaginary dream state?
No, it's not in the imaginary dream state, but when there is a dream state created, oftentimes in the dream state, those relatives, friends, associates, etc., will enter the dream to pull the person out of the dream.
So there's a death experience beyond this belief system.
Exactly.
Which is what you know.
Yes.
When you say you know, what's that?
Evergreens.
You mean, is there surveillance of humans as they die by this other dimension? We call it the astral plane, is that?
Term it whatever you will.
The astral plane. Are they surveilling and helping people through, and they have to kind of monitor people's consciousnesses when they come through?
Not so much monitor, but allow the person to live his belief system so that they can enter the belief system and alter it. Now, consider the number of ways that we have cast off clay, the number of societies that we have belonged to. We belong to a considerable number of societies, from hunter societies to simple farming, to advanced societies. Now, each one of these had a different Book of the Dead. Now, a near-death experience to a person in a hunting community would be associated with, quote, the happy hunting grounds. You see?
And that imagery manifests to them in their dream state.
Because that is what is necessary for them. Take a Christian near-death experience with a white light at an end of a tunnel to be greeted by Jesus. You see?
I was going to mention the near-death description. Some people say they are quite common.
Oh, yes.
Beyond cultures.
Beyond cultures. Oh, yes.
What is that basic common thing that happens?
The basic common thing is that very strongly culturally oriented. Very strongly.
That's what happened. You're saying that's... Mm. But what about the white light that everybody, every culture sees?
You see, term it this way. Not every culture sees that white light in the same way.
But it's there. There's some manifestation of energy.
It's there. However, how it's perceived is culturally based.
The user is the content, to use McLuhan's phrase.
Yes, very much so.
The user of that consciousness, soul energy that we all have is mutated by each culture.
Yes.
Now, there is another dimension. There's a consensus reality on the astral plane, if you call it. You know, something that once you get out of your dream state and get used to the shock of death, whatever it takes, and you are then communicating with souls in like a city, so to speak.
Yes, that'd be a useful description.
And I get from when we did the JFK assassination that the souls of some of the people involved in the assassination were there. It sounds like there's an ESP communication, a very high sensitivity among souls on this dimension, after death experience.
And the best word to use in that is resonance.
Yeah, it's amazing resonance between millions of souls, right?
Between billions of souls, yes.
And they're all communicating, and, I mean, they're not interfering with each other, but they're very sensitive. We are very sensitive when we're dead to this stuff, to this
presence.
This presence of everybody else, right?
Yes.
And that's why it's very hard for you to describe to us that experience, because it's very different from the isolation of consciousness on this dimension, right?
In that, yes, but there's still certain descriptions can be given. In that, term it that you would have a radio that's on to all channels.
And you can absorb all channels at once.
And be able to perceive that which to which you would direct yourself.
Right, so, yeah, it's not a multi-level noise going on. You just can tune into anything that you want.
You can be focused and focused at the same time.
Yes.
But you're focusing.
But also,
but then you could defocus and you can absorb all the multi-level, what would maybe in this dimension appear to be noise. You're more adept in this other dimension to perceive the multi-levelness.
Yes.
And take in a lot more, so to speak.
Yes. And the reason being is that... You see, when a soul casts up clay from this dimension, he is that personality. The soul of the person is still the person.
Mm-hmm.
He is still the person. However, term it to the next stage of, quote, death, unquote, is learning how many personalities you've been, and where, and when, and for what reason.
And you're capable of computing that?
Yes.
Or do you have to practice? Do you have to get used to it?
No, it is so oft times done that, yes, it did require practice which no longer requires practice.
You mean earlier in consciousness's evolution it required practice?
In the earlier evolution of the decision of souls to choose, when you can choose between one rock and another rock, and you've only done it once, you have to correlate. Now, to correlate all of the existences, it's not as hard. It's easier.
So that our, whatever you call consciousness that transcends these different dimensions, you know, the thing that sort of comes here and then goes, dies and goes and operates on that dimension, that is learning new ways of relating itself. You know what I mean? Like, death is not a concrete zone that's finite. It's an evolving tool in our way to interact between the two dimensions.
Exactly. One important point here is that when one is reunited with memories, reunited with self, reunited with fullness, term it that,
yes,
then the life is examined. It's examined from all of its various activities, inactions, actions, etc. So the person have then the overview of the existence. But we assure you it's far more complicated than this. Far more complicated.
Yeah, and so once I heard the evergreens was said, someone told me, maybe Ellie, the many souls are there wondering what to do next. Whether to, when to reincarnate or wondering what, there was a questioning, hanging around kind of expression, I guess.
It's an examination. Well, realize that from that perspective, you've lived the life already and already know what you've learned from it.
So that's part of the learning, is you could get
which you do.
Which we do what?
Live it again.
Yeah, now does one make a choice when to reincarnate, or is there a consensus people agree?
There is always discussion, but it's always choice.
Right, but it seems to be that there's a dialogue going on between souls that you have been involved more with than others.
Oh, yes.
So they're little gangs, or maybe that's too hard of a term, little cliques of souls that when they die, they say, well, I was involved with you a lot, and what are we going to do the next time? This kind of thing goes on?
But they will then examine that life that they have had lived and will live.
And the clique.
It's the same life.
Yeah, and they examine their clique interaction, so to speak.
And look at it. You see, that is one of the things that make it somewhat problematic to understand. As we say, the objective of all of this is to experience everything in the universe but one thing. And that is reuniting with God. It's the one thing that has not been experienced. Then the life of the soul is complete. Realize that it's already happened.
That we've reunited.
Yes. At the same time, it is not. There will be no need for reincarnation.
Yeah, it has not. And then you said, so there's no need for reincarnation.
If there would be no need, since there is, but since there is simultaneously not, then there is a need for reincarnation.
I think if one can accept, I don't want to say passively accept, but I feel that I can understand the ambiguity of consciousness in these other levels more and more in this body, and I don't know if it's a problem for me. I don't feel I'm united with God already, but I know that it will get better or more sophisticated or something.
Yes.
And that is part of God, is the unfolding of this time thing.
Mm. Well, you can tell you one thing. We have searched for God ourselves and have not found God yet.
Yet you know, you have it, you experience it pretty good up there. Mm-hmm. Experience quite an intimacy there, don't you?
Oh, an intimacy, yes. But have not discovered God.
And you probably won't.
Ah.
You respond to that? You probably won't?
We will.
Evergreens, isn't it true, though, that what we... Is this some kind of just something we hang on to believe that God is inside of us, that we are a part of God?
In other words, searching for ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to be the nature of consciousness. It's like an after image or an incompleteness that's necessary to be consciousness. And if you really perceive that, then you accept it more. But you can't stop consciousness trying to complete itself.
Exactly.
Okay, so we at the same time we have God, and at the same time we do not.
Yes.
Which is the nature of consciousness, which is God.
Exactly.
It's a simple membrane of, yeah. Like I call it the tip of the finger.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I understand it.
You're touching your tactility as you think of it.
Yes.
Nothing more needs said, almost, but we will continue leaking language, I call it, leaking language.
Yes, it's not only leaking language, but the fascination of it.
Yeah.
Is that in the search for God, the more we find ourselves.
That's almost what I think of the Christian faith, and it's in other religions, but of cultural optimism, or of the loving to be alive, because you have a basic optimism that you're going to get better. It's going to get better, and you're going to you just don't get depressed about it.
Exactly.
And people forget that, though, but that's part of the joke of consciousness, is that you momentarily fall asleep.
Yes.
It's hypnosis, and I always thought that Marshall meant that in the metaphor of his writings, Marshall McLuhan. Every present is an invisible environment, and you see the past.
Mm.
That, to me, is what we just talked about. Mm. Consciousness is an invisible environment, yet you see it and experience it, but it's incomplete.
And every sense added changes consciousness.
Yes. And then you can go beyond. Then you go to metaphors of technologies as extensions of sense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So which affect consciousness.
Which affect consciousness.
Yes.
And it's amazing how this thing that's ever there is affected. Yet it's kind of like a crystal, hard crystal that's never changed.
Mm.
So it never... It seems that life is to be experienced.
Oh, yes.
But part of the experience is that you're experiencing other consciousness that will interact and interfere with your experiencing of it.
Well, as we say, the objective of life is to experience experiencing.
Yeah. And to say that does not stop what's going to happen, or the problems that are going to happen?
Not at all.
Doesn't it at all, does it? Yet saying is very much of experience.
Exactly.
And experiencing at the soul level or spiritual level is also the same purpose. What you do, whether you're talking to Michael or whether you're just communicating with other minds or other souls.
In another dimension.
In that dimension.
Yeah.
That's experiencing.
That's still experience.
Okay, I have some.
Cool.
All right, so in history... according to the history of the Evergreens talking in the booklet, Visitors from Time and Space, I think I recall that there wasn't much interaction between extraterrestrials and civilizations since about 4,000 or 6,000 BC, the time of Adam and Eve in our myth, Christian myth.
Yes.
Before that, there were periodic alterations or interactions with humanity.
Yes.
Now, the Evergreens explained to us a year ago or so that you're a new attempt to communicate and interact with this dimension. All right?
Yes.
This is a new evolutionary agreement or scenario you guys have worked out to attempt this now. It would not have been done before.
Because consciousness was not the same.
Yeah. So when I hear about people talking about the popularity of some Indian cultures, the Cherokee, I can't remember her name, Diane Wahu, she writes books about their culture, their secret religious societies had stories of being in touch with UFOs and extraterrestrial intelligence way back in their past, and this was precious knowledge in their culture.
Yes.
And I say, well, we have contact now with a new thing. We don't have to. We can appreciate the past experience that it could have happened and seems to have happened. But with the evergreens, we can now have a more immediate and more amazing interaction, more profitable, rather than worrying about past attempts. You know what I mean?
Well, because consciousness is different.
Yeah, we have a new contact, and it's not that the evergreens are extraterrestrial, but there's been mediumship through history. This is a new form of mediumship, a more accomplished form of mediumship, which would naturally happen right now because consciousness has evolved to this complexity here and where you are.
Yeah.
I don't want to... Is that okay? I'm doing all the talking here, but it's good to get their response or nods.
Did he ever give a comment on what he said?
Yeah.
He's right.
Okay, you couldn't say it any better kind of thing, and yet we keep... Now, how can we... the evergreens have much optimism about the success of their agenda, right?
Oh, yes.
Is there anything that I can do to help in expanding this?
Well, live a happy life.
Well, what about the information that I'm gathering?
Well, use it how you see fit.
All right. It is true, according to the Visitors of Time and Space booklet, that extraterrestrial intelligences were affecting humanity in the past and making cultural advances.
Yes.
Now, at that time, was there any shaman channeling information that was explaining to the tribe that experienced extraterrestrial intelligence was helping explain to them what they were experiencing?
Not so much that.
So this is new, where we have you helping us interact with this extraterrestrial intelligence that's coming to us right now.
We understand it. We are not path makers for them. We're path makers for a certain consciousness. The objective of ourselves is... It is necessary for man to understand the reasons why he does what he does. The description of man, as found through his description of God, has shifted. Now, as that shift continues, where does it place man's consciousness?
I asked that question on my show the other night. I was saying, I mean, the West has the consciousness in the head. The Orientals or mystical third world cultures like the Indians have their consciousness in their lungs and their breath and their heart. But I say the consciousness is not in the body anymore. It's there in the body. Are you yawning or are you getting ready to speak?
We're saying that each society would place consciousness where it chooses to.
Yes.
It's convenient to put consciousness between your eyes. It's convenient. Well, that is where self is put.
That's common to all cultures?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's common to call self and consciousness by the same name. Me.
Yeah.
Which is not accurate. But it's convenient. Unfortunately, it leads in the wrong direction. But consciousness, as McLuhan so aptly saw it, and the extension of other philosophical understandings where man living in a cave was used as an example, that McLuhan saw that consciousness changed through methodologies of communication. The book was considered a very powerful tool capable of destroying societies. So therefore the book was kept in the hands of those who controlled. Now, what does a book do? To understand that is necessary to go back some several thousand years. When there is an oral tradition and there is no book, memory is greatly enhanced. However, not everyone has the ability. Memory, there were certain, as in the East, as in African, the Gringoires would be able to give an entire lineage of a family. But you had to train the Gringoire. Not everybody could be trained. But nonetheless, the world existed through oral tradition, by the use of memory, by the training of memory. The book was the introduction into the system, so there would not be the reliance on those who had that oral memory.
By book, you mean before the printing press?
Oh, long before.
Yeah, writing itself.
Long before.
You mean by that writing?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the method of storing it.
Yes.
Now, these were kept, these writings were kept by those who ruled. And those who did this eliminated, as much as they could, the memorizers. Those who knew held sway. The book was then realized as an explosive force. So therefore, books were limited. Its most strongest phase of this, as far as Western culture is concerned, is the Dark Ages. The book was proscribed only to those who would know how to use the information, and that group was very, very small. It still carried over into this time by the banning of books. The knowledge would harm, or so it's believed. Look at the index of the prohibited books to the Catholic Church. The index of books prohibited to East Germans. The index of books prohibited in Africa. You see? Knowledge is power. I'll go back further to the printing press. But that explosion of the printing press, which had existed for thousands of years in the East, in a Western culture, where the consciousness was that which it was, it was a fuse that lit an explosion. Why did it not work in China? It did. But the beliefs were that books were but for poetry.
Rather than, what's the opposite of poetry?
Administration.
Administration, yeah. Is Marshall McLuhan a member of the Evergreens?
No. But we can rapidly, through resonance, be in contact with that individual.
And access him.
Absolutely, yes.
Is he working on his theories of that about this lifetime in the 20th century and updating them from the perspective he's in and the experience he's having now?
Yes.
Is he satisfied with his books and what he wrote compared to what he can see now?
No, he knew he did the best that he could.
And we're getting an update on his thinking?
Yes.
All right. I do want to go back to the... I forgot something about the mescaline and the LSD. You said to Carolyn that she had the experience of mescaline, and then, I don't know if it occurred to her, but you suggested to her that she could, if she could have it through a drug, then she could have it naturally, or could access that experience without the drug. Do you remember saying that
yes.
to her?
Yes. Oh, yes, indeed.
And you said because the substance was activated, or because the experience was activated in the body, that meant that substance that she took was in the body.
The substance is there.
Does that mean mescaline is in the body?
No, the substance was there. It made certain alterations at the sensorium. Now those patterns are there in the sensorium. They're there. But all she'd need to do, as any mescaline user needs to do, is not take the substance anymore, but just give themselves the permission to access that which they've created within themselves. It's a creation.
Where, when you said the substance was in the body...
What we meant was that the substance, not mescaline itself, but the substance of mescaline, which is that which is learned from that mescaline, is there. Virtually as if the body is flooded with mescaline, but is not.
So it's some kind of consciousness retrieval of the experience and memory, and that's part of substance.
Yes,
the internal right. Substance.
Yes.
It's like a mind-body interplay.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, she was saying the other night that she can think of it and sort of feel it. It seems to me that she couldn't get it as powerful, but she probably would say she is getting it as powerfully.
No, the circumstances are not exactly the same. If you would see mescaline rituals, they are extremely accurate in trying to get the circumstance exactly the same as previous. Same time of day, same conditions, same chants, etc.
And they take the mescaline.
And take the mescaline. However, do it enough times, and that itself is culturally dictated how many times, because in truth, all that's necessary is once. And it can be repeated any time. The fully adept mind would not need to take it ever.
Right, and I see that once it becomes part of your environment to relate to our earlier experience, once you have the matter, makes you have the experience, then it becomes part of your memory and knowledge and recall pattern, part of your substance, then to replay it is to get trapped, because it seems the tribal rituals around mescaline are trying to replay that fantastic experience and forgetting that, no, it's part of your substance. You can replay it. It's a lighter effect. It's a recall pattern that's not as strong as when you first had it as an invisible environment. Now that it's visible and knowable, you can then look for the new invisible environment, however you imagine you could get it from. You know what I mean?
So therefore, it's a stepping stone.
Yeah. So you are changed by it.
Oh, yes.
And so people who took LSD are changed by it, but they don't understand that the flash... Rewind and just check.
Okay. People take LSD.
All right, just do that thing, right. People who take LSD... They have the flashback. Because they might believe what Leary said and relate it to psychological problems or spiritual metaphors, they have to realize they've been changed by LSD. You know, beyond chromosome damage, you have changed yourself. And the recall of that should be taken as a factor of remembering the experience. Therefore, there doesn't need to be that much confusion or worry about flashback. The flashback is proof that you've changed.
Yes.
You don't have to worry about it as a damage.
Exactly. At the same time, LSD without Leary's book is not useful. Because you could use Leary's book or you could use a telephone book, in truth. But if you predict the predicted, then you will live the prediction, which is not the same as a mescaline experience.
You can't do that with mescaline. You can't predict what's going to happen to each individual person.
Or even to the same person. You see, that is the difference between the two substances. Mescaline would give you, the first time you take it, you would have that experience. The objective is not to relive the experience, but use the change to find out other parameters of yourself. To take mescaline as a platform, a stepping stone, to find that other transparency, is the objective. But LSD returns you to where you were all the time. The only difference is the neuron firings.
Right, so one would maybe take mescaline in 2 years again after you have properly absorbed it and changed, and then you'd arrive at a new platform, maybe take the mescaline to leap to another level.
That was the ultimate use of it. And because of that, that's why mescaline has been placed in a religious connotation.
It's not
a recreation drug.
Yeah.
Is there that one would, by the taking it, go to first year university, then later go to second year university, but never to return where one was, ever. Not the reason for it.
Yeah, see, the Evergreens define second coming as a time of, you know, the religious concept of second coming as a time of perpetual change. The advantage of electric conditions, the service of our society, if you can handle it, is that you don't get stuck in tribal rituals and group patterns that man did in the kind of totalitarian life they had in each little tribe. Mm-hmm. Our society is so fractionalized and individual autonomy is possible under the electric technological environment that we can change and go to higher levels or of experience, I don't know if it's higher, but new levels of experience faster and not be limited by replays.
Exactly. And that is why when you have a fractionalization of societies, realize that those societies were artificially congregated, artificially cemented together. Because it was the belief that larger, better, etc., etc. And every, it goes through the cycle where it form, break apart, reform. Now, where there are very large tribes, the fractionalization divides tribe into sub-tribe, into sub-tribe, into individual. There is only one tribe, and that's individual. As McLuhan says, eventually, it will be one person interacting with one person, interacting with one person, interacting with one person. Consider a person 200 years ago. Who are you? Is the question asked. That person will say, he is English, a Londoner, an East Ender, you see, graphically located, geographically secure, and that is his identity. Location is identity. But with fractionalization and the force of fractionalization means that location geographically is not important anymore, but the location of consciousness is. So as geographics decrease, consciousness increases. Who are you? The question we ask you. You would say that you are a North American. Canadian. Torontonian. But not specifically bound by that. Because where were you before? East Coast Canada. You see?
I would... If you ask me who I was now, I would use a lot of McLuhan's ideas. I say I'm discarnate. I'm everybody on the planet. I'm so intimately connected now.
Well, that discarnate, in truth, a word that can be confused with something else, unfortunately.
Yes.
But if you would say discountried, yes. Disgeographicized, yes.
Yeah, because actually, the McLuhan's term discarnate implies going beyond our bodies, beyond our senses. What he meant by that internal sensory life,
but we are enhancing our sensory life, basically. But
there's a distinction between sensory life and internal sensory life. Well, is that that's, well, that's a paradox. It's not a necessary distinction, right?
Yes.
All right.
It is to a certain level of consciousness. It's necessary to distinguish between internal, external. What is being realized is that internal is affected by external, external is affected by internal, and there's a symbiosis between the two that causes continual elevation.
Right, and the electric environment has extended our tactile sensorium, which is very inner.
Yes.
So we're living in an inner environment.
Yes. Now, consider the concept of Waldo. Now, a Waldo is a simulacrum of a human that can work in other environments than a human.
Is this a computer? I don't know what Waldo is.
It's a person operating a tractor at a distance.
Oh.
He sits on the edge of the field and with his duplicate set of controls, controls the tractor going up and down the field.
Yes.
Now, with sufficient feedback, there is no distinguishing between being in that tractor or on the side.
What would be the not discarnate? What would the be you would say that is? Dis what? Dislocalized.
Yeah. Now, let us suggest that you have a simulacrum of yourself that's 2 inches tall. It does everything that you command it to do.
Yeah.
It go up a pipe, it tighten a bolt, it adjust a valve.
It looks like me.
It could look like anything.
Yeah.
That as far as you're concerned, you're 2 inches tall. Going through small openings, into et cetera, et cetera.
In terms of what I can accomplish.
In terms of what you can accomplish. The point we're stressing is that is a certain alternate of a certain electric age.
That's in 100 years or so?
No, there's not. Less than 50.
Less than 50?
Yes. Now, consider for a moment that a telephone puts yourself wherever you choose to be.
Yeah. What's wrong with the term discarnate?
It has been used to describe spirits.
Right.
Rather than loss of localization.
Which, if you explain that way, it's a useful term.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's the way Marshall meant it.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to say something more about this?
No.
Okay.
Elapsed time, please.
All right. You just brought up something that Mike once asked me many months ago to ask about. He told me that the Russians had made a breakthrough in electromagnetic warfare, I think the term was.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain a bit of that technology and how they're using it now?
The Soviets are working on very highly classified material that work on phase-shifting electromagnetic waves.
Not like the Philadelphia experiment.
No, very
those
different.
Kind of fishes.
No, different. Very different.
And what can it do?
Well, it creates a field in which normal electrical flow ceases. It is virtually the opposite of a superconductor. It stops electrical flow.
And how can this be used in attacking or warfare kind of thing? Would it make people fall down?
It would make people fall down, yes. It cause equipment to stop working. It is not yet being able to be projected. It work in a field, and there's been no shaping of the field as of yet.
Are other intelligence agencies not in the USSR aware of this?
Oh, yes, they're aware of it.
Are the Russians aware that they are aware of it?
Not all of them, a few.
And so are they in dialogue with the other people in other intelligence agencies about what they're doing?
Not intelligence agencies. But a considerable amount of work is being done in the Soviet Union on this, but it is they're keeping much of this information classified, much of it, to their chests.
Right, but those that have access to them, is there a certain trust there that they will tell people in other parts of the world?
Across 93-94 more, but it's considered an anomaly at the moment. It's not considered a great potential because it cannot be focused. And it requires a considerable amount of technology to accomplish this. But it works surprisingly well. It gets more shared across the next several years. As the world goes through this area of tension, and then as that abates, then more sharing after that.
The way you spell out, the Russians are leading in this.
Yes.
They've got the edge. They've invented something, discovered something that other
yes.
people don't have. The way you say the phrase area of tension, I've been thinking about that the past week. Someone told me the other day that George Bush has been planning and preparing for the scenario we have in the Middle East now for years for a potential war. Is this that archetypal Armageddon scenario that's concentrated in the Middle East? We're going to go through that, and that's what you mean by area of tension. We've got this backlog to go through there, right?
Yes, much has to be solved.
Beg your pardon?
Much has to be solved. Much.
Much of the implied racism between the different oligarchies.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and we've come to that head, so, I mean, I'm optimistic. I think the Evergreens are optimistic. But we have come this fall to the Armageddon scenario that people have been looking for.
But this, we assure you, is not Armageddon.
Right, it's not going to happen.
No, this is not the final. But at the same time, much solved by it. Much solved by it. Realize, for the first time in the history of man, there's been a concerted effort against an aggressor. That aggressor has no allies.
That's new.
That's very new. First time in recorded history.
Now, the final Armageddon, what is the date of that or the potential of that?
The final Armageddon? Very, very different. Very different. When there are no aggressors, consciousness changes. It's not peace that people want, because peace is not an absence of war. But to go beyond peace, not to go beyond war, but to go beyond peace is the answer.
But
this must end soon.
Well, the final Armageddon is 2,000 years from now?
The greatest Armageddon of all is when you realize that almost all of the knowledge that you've gained can be shifted by the introduction of new knowledge. That's Armageddon. Not of war, but a vast, vast leap in knowledge, and that happened within the next 500.
And that's what McLuhan implied.
Yes.
Yeah. That resonates.
And now this must end.
Okay. Is there any final comment?
This end.
Thank you. Dear Lord, please enfold these entities in thy love and thy perfection. Amen. Please clear any negative influences from these entities now.
Damn.
Allow the body to become completely relaxed. Perform any healing which may need to be performed. Begin increasing the blood pressure to normal naturally, and begin returning all other systems of the body to normal naturally now.
Dan.
And thank you for our session, and fairly well.
We do thank you. To you both. God's blessing.
Thank you. And now I would like Michael to awaken, feeling completely refreshed, relaxed, and loved. Now.
Came out of that session seeing a person who was from the 1200s in this environment today. Now, it's not that he would be imposing his superstitions on top of this. And it's not that it wouldn't take him long to get used to it, but the stresses created by it would be enormous. Just enormous. Patterns of his life would be changed by the very fact that you don't go to bed when it gets dark. And you don't have to light rushes. And therefore you don't have to spend time making rushes.
So what's he going to do?
So the light goes on and he's waiting for nightfall. You know. Looks out the window, sees it is nightfall. Looks inside the room, it's brilliantly lit. In fact, more brilliantly lit than if it was sunshine.
That's like being on LSD.
Yeah.
Confusion of signals.
total confusion. Couldn't understand, would understand a television set, but have to teach himself to see it. It would be moving too fast for him. Everything would be moving too fast. We speak too fast. We think too fast. We think too fast.
Yeah.
In other words, what's 6 times 6? 36. He would say, 1200s man, would say 6 times 6 is 36. You know,
yeah.
That pause in there
yeah.
is doesn't sound like much, but it's indicative of almost everything else. Take him time to think. And I, like you say to him, 5 minutes before lunch, what would you like for lunch? And he didn't really have to think about it.
Yeah.
Well, he knows what he's like, but he doesn't. It's, you know, having a restaurant is an incredible experience.
Yeah.
I mean, other people prepare food for you. Yes.
Now, does this person get used to it? Or is it just
yes.
a life of stress and has a heart attack and dies? You know?
Well, he gets used to it, but he's not in sync with it, if you know what I mean.
You never get in sync.
Never get in sync with it, really. He just goes along and copies the pattern. But
which
would
alienate other people from
yeah,
him. He'd be isolated.
Yeah. But he'd be amazed by the amount of genius in this world.
He would be.
Yeah, just yeah. amazed by it.
Well, he'd think they would, the gods had landed. That,
yeah,
that,
everybody's a god.
Yeah.
Everybody's a god.
And then that would be very right. alienating to him.
Yeah, very, very
hard. He'd feel isolated
yeah.
that he's not... He's in the wrong place.
Hell yeah.
He's not equipped to be a god.
No, he's not equipped to be a god. Consciousness equips a person to be god.
Now, McLuhan, in one of his early books, consciousness equips a person to be god. What is consciousness?
I wanted to get into that. I backed off.
We were talking about as much as language could say it.
They said one phrase, and I just went, wait a minute.
What was that?
Go ahead.
They said that consciousness is not me. That's the people, there are those who believe that, but it's not true. Now, see, I don't say consciousness is me,
mm-hmm.
but I do say consciousness cannot flourish in a human being if the identity is not developed.
Okay.
The me is not developed, so it's dependent on a me.
Okay.
The me is sort of consciousness in a way.
Well, it's only a fraction of consciousciousness. Only a fraction
but
of consciousness. It's a vital point. Agreed.
Right. I think, well, in our dialogue with the Evergreens, we say something. And just like they said, it's me. They would say, we're way off on that, but the nature of language emphasizes this point at this moment, and it's true. But So they would agree with you.
Yeah.
I think so.
You know, even though you pick up on that one point,
it's both true.
It's you've so got,
yeah.
mercurial.
You've got to have
it.
Yeah, you've got
to. True and not true at the
yeah,
same time.
Yeah.
And
but what I get down to it is, identity is an element of consciousness. But one thing is, consciousness continually reinforces identity. Continually.
To be free.
So here we have my identity as a person in 1200s is limited by the nature that I live in. We have, to an extent, overcome nature.
Yeah.
Our cycles have changed, etc. I can pick up the phone. I'm in contact with Vancouver in seconds.
Yeah. Faster than you can contact your neighbor here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If we had a race,
between Ellie and I on the telephone and the next door neighbor, she'd win.
Yeah.
So our consciousness is literally changed. Now, are we any smarter? Yes. We're a hell of a lot smarter because of that.
But we have the paradox of existence is that you have new problems with your new smartness.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? That's what they were talking about, the complexity of when you're looking at your lives,
right,
and when you're dead, it just, you keep,
yeah,
creating a new complexity, so
yeah,
the dialectic's always there. The tension is always there, we'll call it. You know what,
yeah,
I mean?
The learning tension. The tension of needing to learn.
Yeah.
Or of thinking, am I covered? Am I going to get hurt? We should ask about pain or something there.
Yeah, well, anyway, came out of that session with one thing that was very, very important, and that's for the time in which a person lives, they're very smart. Very smart.
Yeah, humans have always been smart.
Have always been smart to the parameters of the situation that they are in.
Right.
Yeah, there's a part of us that doesn't change. It's the attentiveness of consciousness is always the same.
Yeah, the attentiveness is always the same.
Yeah.
It's the means by which consciousness uses itself that it expands. It's almost like consciousness is like any muscle. It gets stronger if you exercise it.
Yeah.
And
the muscle's changing because you change your muscles.
You change your muscles.
You're mutating your body, then you exercise it differently.
Exactly.
By using TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As an example.
What was interesting came out of that. I was watching a little kid who was watching television. Thoroughly engrossed in it. It was a Sesame Street something.
Yeah.
The kid was thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying it. As he was watching, the neurons in his brain were forming, strengthening, and etc.
Well, you could see them.
You could see that. You could see all the neurons in
you
the brain.
You could know it. You weren't seeing lights flashing, but you
knowing that. And the other one was seeing two hemispheres of the brain and the connecting corpus callosum.
Yeah.
Seeing that. Now, this is going to be a real contentious because, oh my God, this can be read two ways, and I don't want it to be.
By us?
By everybody. But as consciousness increases, so does the corpus callosum.
Mm-hmm.
The brain's going to change.
Yeah, the brain is changing. Physically, the brain is changing.
The corpus callosum, the connector between the two.
Becomes thicker and thicker and
because
thicker.
Because it's getting more
communication.
But our skull's going to get bigger or something?
No.
Well, the corpus callosum, the thing that connects the two halves, if it gets bigger, that just means there's more interchange between the two halves.
Yeah, it's going to be a stronger internal muscle.
Stronger internal
its
muscle. Yeah.
Within its primers of our normal skull.
Yeah.